The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Hello and welcome once again to It Came From The Radio. This is your host, Mario Torres, speaking. With me in the studio, I have our senior correspondent, Charlie Saladino, sitting next to me.
Hello.
That's it?
I just have an hello today. I'm in no mood.
And we have...
I have too many great guests. Just go
yes,
on.
We have many great guests in the studio. We have friends of the show, Chantal Eights.
Yep, you got it.
All right. Rafael Tavares.
Don't worry, she's on a delay, 3-second pause. She's
gonna get into the mic.
We had a whole conversation
2 seconds ago.
Okay, so I'm not the... We're both funny here.
And we also have a very special guest who's new to the show, Alex Kurtry.
No, that's not Alex.
Wait, oh, Alan James. Alan James Edwards.
See, that's it, that's it, wrong. Yes.
Alan James Edwards, who's a writer.
Yes.
For AHR Visions, mm-hmm. Right? There
correct.
We go. See, I got it right this time.
Mm-hmm. Hey, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for coming in. We appreciate it. So if anybody's having trouble listening to us on the air, you can go online to www.am1240wgbb.com and listen to us on the live audio streaming. Also on the GBB website, you can see us live in the in-studio web camera right now in high definition, provided that you're listening to us now as opposed to in the future on iHeartRadio, which we're on.
I can't hear a word you're saying. This is
you can't
on.
Hear us at all, really?
No, it's not on.
That's not.
I just want everyone to know. Mark gave me a pair of headphones that don't work. So
I will rectify that as soon as possible.
Okay, yeah, all just right. Carry on.
And so, usually at this point in time, we take it away with the news. But since we have so many guys here, I decided to just go with the guests. But I know Charlie, you wanted to mention something. Right, so you want to mention the sad news for today?
Yes.
So that way we won't have to mention it next week?
Yes, the sad news is Rod Taylor passed away. A very good actor. We know him from The Time Machine. And what else?
I had the paper at home. I wasn't going to do it until next week. You're the one that said you wanted to do it. So
The Time Machine was my favorite movie.
Really? Twilight? The Time?
Yeah,
wasn't
it was
Twilight Zone
H.G. Wells. Yeah.
Wasn't he a famous role for Twilight Zone, if I'm not mistaken?
What?
He was in a couple episodes of Twilight Zone?
No.
No? Oh, okay.
No. And his other memorable movie, The Birds.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, see. Yeah. All right, because I had a whole bunch of deaths
yes,
that came out. But
very sad.
So, yes, Rod Taylor.
Yeah,
at 82?
I believe he was 84.
84. Oh, see?
Yeah.
That's many years from the beginning.
Just wanted to mention that because he definitely deserves to be mentioned.
Yes.
Carry on.
I do have a whole bunch of deaths and whatnot, but
right.
Since you wanted to make sure we mentioned it this week, we'll mention it this week.
Okay.
All right.
Enough of the happy news.
Yes. And so also, since we are the official radio show, the Big Apple Con, I want to make sure you guys know about the comic book convention that's coming up in March. The Big Apple Con's 20th anniversary, 20 years ago, they're going to have a celebration of the Big Apple Con, which is going to be back in Manhattan at the Penn Pavilion, which is across the street from Madison Square Garden. And the headliner, I know they have more people added, but the headliner is none other than the Green Power Ranger, Jason David Frank, who's extremely popular now, more popular than he was probably when he was on the show, thanks to social media. For more information, go to www.nycbm.com. That's New York Comic Book Marketplace.com. Tickets are on sale now. I believe they're only $15, so you know, make sure you get your tickets right away. And we're going to be there. We're going to have a table there.
Yes. As I said, I can hear you.
So just nod and smile.
Mark has turned to me for all you people listening out there. Mark has turned to me, and he's saying something, and it's like the Charlie Brown parents. Wah, 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 wah.
That is kind
I
of
do
funny
not
how
hear
that,
it.
How that's working, by the way. So, yeah, so let's get on with our super cool guests.
Yes.
So let's start off with Chantel because she is the actress, writer, creator. What else do you do?
It's much easier to list things that I don't do.
Really?
Yeah, which would basically be nothing.
You don't do nothing. So what have you been doing since the last time you were on the show? I've seen you at many conventions, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, you're going to see more of me at the conventions, especially with AHR Visions running around, helping out the company with social media marketing, helping here Alan James Edwards with his book, Bleed 2039, which is a fantastic book. And an awesome part is I recently got picked up by a small production company who wanted to pay me to create a show. So I made a show about myself. So now it's in the making. So it's just weird. It's just me doing my random weirdness and posting it online.
So is it going to be one of those situations where you're a caricature of yourself, or is this actually you and it's going to be a quote-unquote reality show?
I considered making a caricature, but apparently my best friend here, Ralph, seems to think that I'm weird enough. So he's like, I think that's sufficient.
She's
enough.
She's beyond weird.
I am not that weird.
She's so weird, my voice doesn't sound that weird.
And what have you been up to, Raphael, since, once again, I see you at, like, every convention. It's like you're part of the fixture that's there.
Oh, I keep working with Couch TV to get to the cons and see what we can get out there, and just like you guys, you know, to get the word out of all our nerdiness and goodness and geekiness. And
he also works with Abdul as well to work on his book that he wants to work on.
Abdul Rashid, who'll be calling in later,
right.
For those of you who don't know, and just throw out a random name and everybody's supposed to know who it is.
Because at some point they will. They'll be like, I know Abdul, that guy.
Yeah, I'm working with Abdul. I'm trying to get my book written and done so I can get it into him so he can see it. And hopefully everything will be good.
Hopefully everything will be good.
What it is,
that's such a writer response. Like, I'm not so sure.
What it is that I've been writing the book now for a couple of years, and I've dealt with about three or four different artists, and each one has left me
high and dry.
Exactly. So this book is a long time in the making. And if I can just get one good artist, I can probably get this book off the ground and we can get something good done.
That's why I connected him with Abdul, because I'm like, it's perfect.
So speaking of Abdul, since we actually have someone who works with Abdul, with a book that's here in the studio,
exactly.
Alan
yeah.
James Edwards. Alan James Edwards, three names. He's so yes. Awesome, he has three names.
Yes.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and the book that you brought?
Well, speaking of Abdul, the book was in a written form originally, and actually the concept and the idea germinated quite a while ago, almost 8 years ago, and it was written as a series that could be produced for film or television. And I met Abdul inadvertently through a film production company through Facebook, and we started collaborating just on one pieces. Like sort of setups, right? And we enjoy doing that so much. And for me, it was the first time I saw the vision that I had actually manifested, come to life. And he started making these black and white images that were almost like high art from my point of view, the first frames that I saw. And we got so excited about it that we started talking about actually producing it into a graphic novel series. And we just started working on it. And I'll tell you more about the book, but you know, that's sort of the process of how it started. And the first book is completed now. We premiered it at the New York Comic Con. And there's three more to be completed for this first volume. And then there's more volumes to come. But it's really a franchise, a series, per se. It's just been a great collaboration with Abdul.
So
that will be coming on later, calling in.
Yes, that we're talking about and he's not here yet.
You know, because
so the thing that's I want to focus on is that you are a writer.
Correct.
Write novels. How does that process work? Do you just sit around one day and say, I feel like writing a detective story, or I want to write about superheroes? How does the process come into play?
You know, interesting story about me is I started as a screenwriter, and I started adapting books. and I adapted the first version of Enemy at the Gates with the author William Craig. And this was in the 90s. It eventually became produced. It was produced by Mandalay, but William Craig passed away, and the rights, we lost the rights, and it went to the estate and went to Mandalay, and I lost the thing, right? So, so after that experience, I was like, I don't want to adapt books anymore. I want to write my own stories, right? And then once I made that decision to write original fiction, the process started from there. And I knew what I wanted to write. I wanted to write entertainment, action, but with some meaning behind it, some depth behind it, some historical depth. And I started reading these detective stories from the 20s and 30s, the Dashiell Hammett stories, the Chandler stories. And I just picked them up inadvertently from the bookstore. Like I met this girl who said she writes detective stories.
It always starts with
Amir. Yeah, yeah, and I was like, oh, let me buy her a detective story. And then I bought one for her, and I bought a couple for me, and I started reading them. Right?
Wait, you only bought her one
and a couple
for you?
Yeah. I wasn't sure she was going to read it or what. So, you know, this is when I was a waiter back in so at some restaurant. She was, you know, the pretty waitress. Right? So I started reading these books. And I'm like, these were written in the 20s.
Right.
And they're the coolest action books. You know, you're talking about guys with two guns, you know, all the stuff that I loved about action movies. But in the 20s, this was happening. I didn't realize it was happening. And I found it so long ago, and I found them to be the most, I said, if you made these into movies, like this is something that this is like Lethal Weapon and Die Hard all put together. And, you know, so I decided I wanted to write in that genre, but I didn't want to write. Is this getting long winded?
No,
it's cool. Just let me know if I'm going on.
We want the answer to the question.
Am I?
We're all waiting on bated breath.
Just let me know if I'm going on too long, guys. I'll pass the ball.
So
I decided I want to write that genre, but I didn't want to write another book that took place in the 20s and 30s. We see them all the time.
Right.
We see the Boardwalk Empires and the you know them all. I mean, so and I wanted to make the same style but in a different time, right? So I decided to start writing it taking place in the future, and I looked at what made these detective stories amazing. What made The Private Detective? How did that come about? Well, the first thing was there was a depression, right? So once there's a depression, the police aren't financed very well. People are sort of on their own. They're not as reliant on the sort of services that are around. Then you combine that with the prohibition, right? And it gets really out of control because there's all of this illegal activity going on in the selling of the prohibited product. And then you can't rely on the police, so you start hiring private detectives, and the gangster era starts, and the violence starts, and all this stuff. So I wanted to sort of recreate that atmosphere or milieu, but in another time, and write detective stories like that. You know, I really loved Apocalypse Now because it was the Conrad book, but it was placed in Vietnam. It was placed in a contemporary type of sense, something that's more relevant today than just going to the theater and just watching, you know, the past again. So I started creating this environment, and I said, okay, in the future, what could happen? How can a depression happen again? It can happen again. You know, we had this thing in 2008, which was kind of frightening, right? It was very close, and you hear stories about the ATMs drying up and everything, but then there were the bailouts. But what if there weren't the bailouts? What would happen? I don't know. So I thought a second depression wasn't so far-fetched, right? So in the second depression, there would still be wealthy, I believe. So what happens in the story? This story takes place in 2039, the first series, and in 2029 there's a depression, but the wealthy class isolate themselves in the cities and they build gates around or seawalls around Manhattan and around. So you need a passport to get in and out. So America becomes this plutocracy, and the passport is called an exeat, but it's kind of similar to the Easy Pass, but it's just not as easy. It's not as easy. You just can't use it. So the commoners are left outside the walls, and it starts to get retro. The technology stops for them.
Right.
They start going back to the way it was in the past. Kind of like Road Warrior a little bit, but more glamorous. They sew their own clothes, and they learn to dance, and they actually become happier in a way because they're just living for the day, and they're not worried that they're not rich or that then the prohibition happens. But what's the prohibition? The overclass, as they're called, they pass legislation to prohibit tobacco products, which for them wasn't that big a deal because the richer people aren't really smoking, right? But for the commoners, the prohibition caused cigarettes to become more fashionable again, and tobacco products become more fashionable again. And this underground black market for cigarettes starts to flourish, right? So now we have the tobacco prohibition and second depression, and guess what? Voila, we got noir. We're back. So that's how it all started. And the first story. Should I say? I'm not supposed to bang on the table, and I'm banging on the table. This is my first radio show, so guys, bear with me.
You're doing fine. Just
how am I doing? I'm sitting on my hands right now, just so you know. So.
And he's a very animated speaker. So
yeah,
it's quite
my hands are flailing. You know, people that sit next to me in restaurants are like, can we move two tables down? So now we have. Now I have the canvas to start drawing,
right.
to start writing these stories. So the first story takes place in Amsterdam, New York, which is upstate near Albany. It happens to be the center of the cigarette black market trade at the time. So it's actually in a heyday because there's a lot of cash rolling around from the black market industry. The detective gets called to the town by the mayor to investigate a crime where the mayor's wife was shot. But it turns out that there's a lot more going on than he realized.
As usual.
As usual. And by the third act, it turns into... Well, I don't want to give away too much of the story because it is a mystery, but it turns into a sort of there's a tobacco wars, basically,
okay.
Right? And that's as much as I want to tell about the story, I could tell more, but that's just the first volume. Then there's another volume, 2041, that takes place in the South. But anyway... you could see how to visualize this is important because
right.
It's not a straightforward story. There's haze bars where all the, you know, the smoking happens. They're kind of like the bars from the 40s, but they're in the future. There's new music called Naz, which is neo jazz that, you know, the detective plays clarinet and goes through these Naz. It's techno and hip hop and swing together. And so there's all this stuff. So it was hard to get people to visualize it, right? And when I met Abdul, he really got it. Like, he really got what I was trying to do. And through that collaboration, we manifested the first book. It's a reality, and people like it. It makes sense. The whole, as crazy as it sounds when I describe it, it actually makes sense. And you know, it's really been rewarding. I mean, you could see as the book in front of you.
So, Raphael, since now we have another writer in the room, and it was an amazing thing to see the creative process on somebody else's end. Do you find that you do the same thing when you're making, you said you've been working for a long time on your project. Did you do the same type of background and research into this as Alan did, or is just, I'm just going to whip something together?
It's funny because I've had other writers tell me that they could just come out of nowhere. With me, it's like I've been studying mythology since I was young, so that starts to play into everything I do. All my writings is based on the mythological events and you know, and the history, and you start to craft and mold. So it's pretty much just like he said, because you start with one thing and then it starts building and building and building. If it's a good story, it's going to build to a point where you have something instead of just have superhero B jumps on top of villain A and they have a fight. You know, why are they fighting? Where did the supervillain come from? What makes the hero? What makes the star of the book? You know, you want to know that. You want to start off with characters that actually exist.
So, Chantal, since you're writing your own show, is it the same thing for you? Do you research your life and find out how is the best way to present yourself?
No, not for that. What I decided to do was to trust my best friend to record the random weird things that I do, and it was awkward actually editing the show because I didn't realize there's random things that I do, like winking a lot, or if I'm in the middle of kung fu class, I do splits for no reason.
Yes, she does. So,
to intimidate the opponent.
I have no idea. Like he says, you do weird things.
She does
all the
a split.
Time.
Let's turn around.
So for that aspect, no. But I did start on a comic book that I was writing where I did create an entire science fiction world. And I love sci-fi. I love fantasy. And I took the time to create the language based on the combination of Spanish, Korean, Chinese, and Japanese. That's because that's just my field of the languages that I've studied before. So I created the written language because I wanted to create an entire world of cultures where it's an actual world, very much like Star Wars or, Out in the Shire. That's what I wanted to create with it. So I think the best process is when you get to sit down and research everything because you can create it. It can become authentic. It's not just a random idea like, oh, that sounds good, because sometimes your first thought isn't always the best idea.
I was gonna throw the commercial, but we have everybody. So we're ready for our commercial break? All right, we'll be right back with a Came From the Radio.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music. Wow, that was hot. Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came From the Radio. This is your host, Mike Turner, speaking along with our senior correspondent, Charlie Saladino, Alan James Edwards, Rafael Tavares, Chantal H. from AHR Productions and AHR Visions, AHR Visions and Couch TV. And now we also have someone who we've been talking about for the past half an hour. We have Abdul Rashid, the CEO of AHR Visions, on the phone. Say hi, Abdul.
Hi, everyone.
There we go. And also, we have Alex Curti. See, I finally got to him. Is that how I pronounce it correctly? Curti?
Kuteri.
I wasn't even close. I wasn't even close. I had two chances to say it wrong.
Yeah.
And he is the art director, so of which of the entire company, or are you on a specific book?
The entire company.
All right. So I guess let's continue on. For those of you who weren't paying attention, we have been talking about Abdul and AHR Visions, along with read the book. Hold it up. Thank you. With the Bleed 2039. Thank you very much. So, Abdul, why don't you tell us about AHR Visions and how did that come to be?
AHR Visions is a transmedia studio that focuses on various different genres. I'm a big fan of the pop culture industry and pop culture in general. I've always been a fan, and I fell in love with the genre when I read Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns back in 88 and everything at the tender age of 14. And it was kind of interesting for me because I've always wanted to storytell through my art for all intents and purposes. And so over the years, when you, as most artists who are probably listening, most creators who are probably listening to the show can relate, you want to get your samples to Marvel and you want to get, or DC, or, you know, one of the big two for all intents and purposes. And then, of course, you have a file closet full of rejection letters. So, especially when your talent is raw. And over the years, I've been, fortunate enough to, get into the storytelling medium and get out of it, so on and so forth and everything. I've been fortunate enough to do some things with some Marvel-based properties and then do some filler works back and forth with various different studios over the years. And I just started realizing that this is after working on a particular project and meeting Alex. I was thinking that, we can do this ourselves and actually, put out some pretty solid quality stuff and everything. So I decided to establish the company and go through the painstaking work with the business dynamics of it, which, Lord knows, I had no clue that it was that much involved. But, it's kind of that baptism by fire. But fortunately, you have I have good people around me, and Alex being one of them. And in the process of that, getting a chance to meet Chantal and Ralph and Alan and a number of other people over the course of the past couple of years. And the studio is very young. We're kind of like in our newborn baby stage, so to speak. But fortunately, we came out walking. And it's just one of those things that my pride in terms of developing properties and that will transition from 2D dimensional format to animation and gaming and eventually live action series for everyone. It's a reflection of the community we live in, a very diverse society we live in. I think the key thing is making sure we present rich properties that everyone who is a fan of the genres, the various genres, can appreciate and enjoy.
So, Alex, you are the art director. So, for people who don't know, what does an art director do besides tell the artist what to do?
At this point, I put together everything, all the visuals and everything you see, from any video that comes out to any web stuff to the covers, the interior work. Basically, what started off was I always did color work with Abdul, and we would partner ourselves up on different projects. If I was doing color, I needed pencils or something like that, I would reach out to him and vice versa. And then that kind of led on to, once we said, let's try and do the whole thing ourselves on this studio project, that's where I was able to really jump in and say, well, I also know how to do web stuff, and I can do a little bit of video editing, and I can do a little bit of this and that. And so that's kind of why I've taken on the art director, because I'm doing a little more than just painting or anything like that. In terms of oversight on other artists, not too much right now, but as it goes forward, the idea is to let creative people be creative here. And I don't plan on being like a dictator in any terms.
Creative dictator.
You're right. Yeah, so really, working with other people just means that, that we get different ideas jumping around. And that's that's really what's interesting to me. So that's the way that I look forward to being an art director through the studio, is just finding good talent and then giving them the whatever help and assistance they may need to kind of refine things. But as for right now, I'm doing a lot of the stuff just on like a one-on-one basis, or just between Abdul and I talking over things.
So I'm actually curious, what does AHR stand for?
Ironically, is actually those are my initials.
That was so anticlimactic. I was expecting a story about how this happened, and then this is, oh, it's just my initials.
No, it's pretty simple. It's just my initials, quite honestly. Over the course of time, I'm sure there'll be some creative origin dynamics, that'll come into play. But quite honestly, I couldn't think of anything else initially, and I just said, like, screw it, I'll just go ahead and use my initials.
So but, Alan, that's your job right there.
Right. Well.
Yeah. But in reality, it means artsy hairy roaches. No. But,
I think I like that.
But it's just pretty straightforward. I mean, like, ironically, as much creative stuff that goes on in my head and everything, that's actually probably the most simplistic, dynamic to the studio and everything. Was just like, what am I going to do? Well, I have. Somewhat of an ego. Screw it. Knock it out.
Also, the production company as name is very traditional. From back in the day, from Disney and MGM, and
the signature, the name involved in the actual branding of the company.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Well, no, because I named my production company Alan James Edwards Productions. So, and I was thinking of different names too, and then I started Googling around, and it just seemed like, just go with the easy. I should do my initials, actually.
Now I feel
taking
bad.
Taking Abdul's lead.
The company I came up with was MFC Studios, as we mentioned in the beginning part of the show. That's not my initials at all. It's my first comic. I spent months on that.
No, but that's
how many years am I on the show? I had no clue.
And you never bothered to ask either.
Right. Yeah, I didn't want to ask because I really didn't care.
My first comic.
Yeah, it was
my first MFC _
Studios.
Right.
Yeah, now you throw MFC. It all together.
So I figured maybe it was I was thinking Mark something, Mark, and then I started thinking the dirty stuff first. But then I said, why do you care? And he'll tell me someday. And this day just came. I had friends with me. Yeah.
You can tell
we
you
all
you
witnessed
tell
it.
Tell stories, yeah. sing
I'll
stories
tell
about this day
to my kids
around
and,
the fire.
Yeah.
All right, so Abdul, do you find, since you said you're a transmedia company, we had a guest on many years ago, I can't remember his name right now, I feel bad, but he coined the phrase transmedia about social media and not just one type. How important is that to have products going across the board as opposed to just a comic book or just a TV show?
Well, I think I know who you're talking about.
Jeff Gomez.
He knew it.
Yeah. And Jeff was, I know Jeff actually. Me and Jeff are actually friends. And it was interesting because, like, we've talked over the years and everything. In fact, he was actually one of the first people I kind of threw the idea at in terms of doing something like this. And he said, one thing that he said to me was like, Abdul, you have, the titles and the property and you have the talent to create it and everything, which a lot of people don't have that. They have the idea in mind and everything. They just don't have content. So you're actually ahead of the game. And so that actually was one of the other things that kind of like gave me inspiration to say, like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and move on this. And again, I can't give enough credit to Alex in terms of, being that that major variable that said, like, okay, I can actually do this, because that's one aspect to my arsenal that I was kind of weak on, was actually being able to do things to enhance my visuals to come off the page. So again, I took my hat to my brother in arms there. But for me, it was important to have the ability to keep to not just pigeonhole myself. Or pigeonhole the studio, rather, in just one format. I think we have comic book companies always generating everything, and this is something actually that Marvel and DC have actually started going in that direction of being able to connect all their different formats and everything together in one form or another. Like if you look at their cinematic properties, just connecting directly with their television properties and what's coming up on Netflix actually pretty soon. And DC is actually starting to veer in that particular direction as well. One of the things that I wanted to do was how I wanted to make it so that it's kind of connected in various different manners, so that if you get the comic book, you can read the comic book and just read the comic book if you just want to have one aspect of the story. But I thought it should be a more interactive experience for the readers, so that, you know, you can get the comic book, read some aspects of the comic book. If, you know, when we, you know, if you watch an animated feature, there'll be fillers that directly correlate with the comic book that you look at and go like, oh, wow, that's why he did what he does or does what he does, because these animated formats are directly, you know, in correlation, continuity with the comic storyline, the original comic storyline. And then when we develop games and everything, some of the things that you do in the games and everything that lead the character to one aspect or another actually gives filler to the primary property of the comic. And ultimately movies and not the merchandise, and it's not if you buy a shirt that means that's the big secret to a spoiler or anything, but the bottom line is that I wanted the experience to be as interactive for the fans as much as possible. And I think that when you kind of get them vested in all the different platforms, media platforms that exist and everything, and give them that ability to kind of help with the direction of the story, so to speak, I think they appreciate it more. You know, there's a genuine and sincere aspect of it. You know, like, I want to engage, like, the way the Arkham series has done so well, and with the renovation, so to speak, of the comic book video games and everything, that's kind of the standard. I want to approach all my properties that are in the studio, all of our properties that are in the studio, in that caveat, that same vein, so that the readers understand and the viewers and the players and so on and so forth. I love all the fans that love these aspects of popular culture and everything, and I want to show that level of appreciation, you know, that AHR Visions is about. You know, we're doing this because we want to have something that, you know, everyone can look at and play and participate in a manner that they haven't had the opportunity from before, from the ground floor up, not just something that's taken up over the years. We're starting this off from the rip, so that people can appreciate it, you know, in all those different avenues and everything. Can you hit all the senses all at once? That's a sandwich. I haven't had a thought about that.
I think we're having some technical difficulties with the phone.
Can you hear me?
We're having some feedback, so I guess we're just going to have to keep on going. Hopefully it gets resolved very quickly, because it's kind of not cool at all. One interesting aspect is that now it's all about interaction with the multimedia. But in the old days, even a couple of years ago, there used to be a time where the rule of writing was keep the audience wanting more. So, Alan, I'm going to throw it to you, Alan, if you can hear me.
Okay.
When you're writing something and you want the feedback from the people, when you're writing something, you have no feedback at all. But nowadays, as Abdul said, interaction is important. So how do you feel as opposed to when you're writing back in the day, as opposed to now, where you have to get the feedback from the people? Or is it better just having that absolutely 100% sole purpose of writing the story as you want it to be told?
That's a great question.
Why I let him do
that. That is a great question. I mean, there's two levels to that, okay? I think that to write in a complete vacuum is not necessarily the best thing, right? So I know for myself, in my history, I was a sketch comedian for over a year, and I was writing sketch, but we were... All right, the sound is working now.
All right.
So, so in that process, we were able to put up scenes. I would write scenes, and we put them up in front of people, and then get
like
responses.
Storyboarding.
Kind of thing, yeah. Right? So in doing that 100 times, you know, I don't know how many times we did shows, I got this experience of writing and then seeing it up and seeing how people reacted to it and to dialogue. And through that experience, I think I gained the ability to write better dialogue just because I was able to put it in front of people, right? Now, that's more, I would say, the learning process. With writing fiction that doesn't go up at all, in other words, up meaning up as a scene or up as shot in a movie,
right?
Because I've written screenplays and seen them be put up. So when they're up, you can see people actually speaking your dialogue, and you can make some adjustments and learn along the way, right? So, and then you can apply that to when you write later things. However, if you don't have that experience, it can be more difficult to do. So in answer to your question, I think that if any writer has the ability to have people read their work out loud, or even read it in a dialogue setting, it can help the writing process.
So Alex, since you're the multimedia guy, I'm gonna say multimedia art director. When you're making something, do you always keep that in mind as to, I might have to change it the next day if I get feedback, or I might have to constantly keep it fluid, as opposed to just you're gonna make one thing?
I personally don't make adjustments per feedback according to the audience or so. I'm not writing a, you know, you choose your way kind of book. I'm telling complete stories when I come to
write. What if Kim Jong-un says something?
I could give a shit less. That was like part of the beauty of starting our own studio.
Just to remind you, Alex, we are live on the radio.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
That wasn't me, right? I didn't.
Yeah, sorry, watch the salty stuff.
You're used to that internet thing. But I personally just like to kind of flow with whatever's working for that media. I know that certain things do really well interactive-wise, like letting the audience make decisions for themselves or letting someone take their own pace with something, and then some things work better where it's a little more restricted, where I get to actually pace the story out, where I get to present it in a little more controlled way. So I would say probably for me, on the most part, it'll depend on the medium and the story. And then I kind of just kind of go loosely with it in those terms. But for audio feedback, I mean, who knows? Certain things, they might. I try not to look at too much of it because I don't want to, I guess, throw myself off the path that I've set the story on. A lot of times I have a very direct something that's either being, you know, laid out or a direct concept. And I find that I can get myself sidetracked by listening to other people's theories. And sometimes it's good, and sometimes it's not. But I do seem to write in a bubble for the most part.
Well, one thing interesting that I learned along the way that I really believe is true is that love kind of translates. So if it's strange, but if you're writing something you love, or you really love what you're creating in your bubble, strangely other people feel that and love it too. It works in music, and it works. And once you, if you get off
absolutely.
Of that, what you love thing, then, but the love is what communicates. I think that.
Yeah,
I know it sounds kind of Interstellar, Matthew McConaughey.
It's
the love, baby.
Where, like, yeah, once you lose the kind of passion that you need from your inner core to create that thing, once that's kind of turned into like a chore and something that has to get done as opposed to something you want to do, yeah, I think it definitely drives the content. And I think you can see that. So I like to keep it a little fluid in that sense of go with what feels good and not try to push things, because, you know, trying to meet other people's expectations, you're never going to please everyone. So, you know, try and please yourself. It'll make the job a little easier at least.
So basically the bottom line is, with everything, you write for yourself and hope people people pick it up and people get it.
Yeah, and some stuff will be for some people, and some stuff won't be for, you know, so you just kind of got to take it how you can.
Yeah.
So
I can piggyback on that. You know, just to, you know, I think one of the core things is, and this is one of the reasons why it's so important to make sure that when you're creating and everything, you're being sincere to the genre that you're creating within. And, you know, the worst thing you can do is trying to create something and thinking that, like, I'm going to go, this formula worked for this property, so I'm going to copy that formula and put just change names around. So it's not Freddy Krueger, it's Betty Mooger. And the problem is that when you do that, people see the insincerity towards it and the disingenuous approach that you have on that. And that's actually, quite honestly, that's a problem with different, you know, properties that have got, that's the lack of originality that you see in Hollywood today. Whereas you don't see a lot of fresh stuff, you see reimaginings of properties that have existed previously, and then they bring in that established fan base that from the original incarnation, and then hope that they can maintain that same level of progression and growth and audience growth and everything from that established audience core. Our approach is that, like, you know, God willing, we're able to create properties that, you know, people can really enjoy fresh and everything, and see that these are fresh additions to a very rich and multi-layered industry and culture in general, and all the various. That's why I wanted. That was one of the reasons why I wanted to look at this as, like, our opportunity as a family to, you know, tackle all various different genres and different areas in that culture, whether it be science fiction, or whether it be, you know, traditional superhero or action adventure, or mythology or horror or what have you. All these areas are going to be hit with one title or a couple of titles throughout the course of the coming years to come.
You use the term family. Mm-hmm. Which one is the crazy uncle?
Which one's the crazy? Oh, you were talking to the guy using profanity a little while ago. Right, he's my brother.
Well, I mean, I like the term family here, and what you were saying before about writing for yourself. In a sense, you're writing for yourself, but there's also this great desire to tell a story to others. And if you're going to start to tell original stories that aren't manufacturing previous stories like Abdul is talking about, you really need tenacity and a lot of people behind you, because the reason why so many stories get regurgitated is partially because of backing, financing, studios. Financiers don't want to take a risk on a new kind of story. So if you're pitching them, oh, it's this, but it really just looks like this, it's, you know, they're more likely to back you. So in order to start something new and have new original stories, you need a group of people behind you, and you need to have that tenacity and that desire to push that, because it takes more levels of convincing to get somebody or a studio or buyers or just to back something that's completely new. You know, if you read the story behind Star Wars, it's fascinating.
How many people didn't believe
in that?
Yes.
And now in retrospect we're like, what? Like, is that possible? but you know, that wasn't an easy project to get off the ground.
All right, so we have about 7 minutes left. Oh, we have 5 minutes left. So we're gonna hit the promotion aspect of the show. Abdul, where can we find out about AHR Visions except going to your house?
Let me see. I live at, no. But let me see. If you visit www.ahrvisions.com, and you'll see this magnificent trailer and everything that my man Alex put together. And then once you go into the actual site, it'll give you a breakdown of what's to come, and some great free downloads, and a couple of about yous, and a breakdown of some of the current projects that are there and some of the projects that are coming out very soon in the next few months. Some projects that will be premiering at some of the Comic-Cons that will be coming up this year. And we'll eventually put a couple of
expectations in terms of the event dates and things of that nature of cons that we'll be participating in, but and give you kind of a little brief synopsis of what we're putting together. And, you know, I think people are really going to enjoy and be surprised, actually, by the quality of the product and what we have in store. But, you know, and this is, mind you, this is just the scratch of the iceberg. We're coming off, we have a lot, you know, coming out in the coming years, and I think people are really going to really enjoy what we are doing to as a contribution to the industry. But again, www.ahrvisions.com.
Alex, do you have your own website, or are you just hanging on to Abdul?
I do some of my own stuff, but that's all. I mean, you can look for Digital Cuddy on DeviantArt, but really, I would just say go to the studio side of AHR Visions, and it's got other links for everything else that we do or that we touch upon, and we're going to have some real cool video series that'll be coming up, and we'll be doing updates on the website, you know, constantly throughout the year. Every month, at least, we give 1 to 2decent updates with wallpapers and free downloads and just teasers and things to come. So I would say, yeah, just keep up with that.
All right. Alan James Edwards.
Yeah.
Where can we find your stuff?
All right. So the Bleed 2039, the first book put out by AHR Visions, is actually available on Amazon.com, which is a big website that sells a lot of stuff.
I heard about that.
Yeah, yeah. Amazon. And it's Amazon.com. And if you type in Bleed 2039, it will come up. It's in a Kindle book. Now, the cool thing about Amazon is they have a comic software for Kindle, so when the book is uploaded to Amazon, it gets converted to the graphic quality is very nice, and a lot of people don't realize, believe it or not, that Kindle is a free download for any application.
Oh.
So you can download free Kindle for iPhone, for your Droid phone, for your PC, for your Mac, and you could have Kindle, and I love Kindle now because I read on the subway. I read more books now with Kindle on my iPhone, but it's a free app, and then if you download Bleed 2039, it is $2.99, and I got to tell you, they charged for the download of the book. The book is kind of heavy because it's graphic, so it's really, you know, we're not making a lot of money on it. I mean, you know, Amazon, they're making a bunch of money.
But it's worth it.
But it's worth it. It's only $2.99. It's like a cup of coffee.
It's worth it. It's worth it. It's a great read.
Small cup.
The rest of those issues.
Not even a large cup of coffee.
That's what I'm saying.
Abdul,
right,
sorry,
exactly.
Go ahead.
It's not a large cup of coffee, exactly.
Chantal, where can we find your stuff?
Oh, just the usual, www.chantal, the French original way of spelling it, with my last name, AYTES, AYTES.com. And if you can't find me there, just type in Cadma, CADMA. You'll find everything there of me.
Raphael?
Well, of course, you can find me on Facebook at Raphael Tavares. And,
say it slower.
All right, you can find me on Facebook at Raphael Tavares.
At T-A-V-A-R.
Just like the band.
Yes.
In the 70s. That tells you my age.
I could have told them that
Dude,
one.
Dude, you sound like Barry White. Just like...
Yes. Why, thank you there. All right, ladies.
Right. Like creepy stalker guy.
So we have about 2 minutes, right? We have 2 minutes left, so we're going to do final thoughts. So, Abdul, final thought.
Let me see. Live long and prosper? No.
I like that one.
No. You know, just stay creative. I think, you know, people, we live in a great time where opportunity is, you know, there for the taking. I think we, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, putting your effort forth and everything and enjoying that creativity.
Alex, final thought?
Fresh year, fresh start, and fresh ideas.
There you go. Alan, final thought? Alan James Edwards. I love saying three names. Alan, final thought?
That's right? Awesome, right?
Alan James Edwards. Yeah, I'm feeling very positive about what's going on around us right now. And a lot of people do come and ask me, how can I make my own book? How can I do these things? And really, it's just, I think, just to stay focused on on one or two projects and just work on them every day. And a year passes by and you actually have something.
Chantal, final thought? Quickly.
Move on and on to better things.
Raphael, final thought?
Of course, I'll say it too. Live long and prosper.
Charlie, final thought?
Very quickly, we just gave you five people who are very creative and not the not running old stuff by you. Check all their websites. Check everything. They're great guys. And girls.
That about does it for this week on
Does It Really Mark?
Join us right here any week on WGBB. If you miss any part of our show, you can go to our website, www.am. It came from the radio.com. Man, I'm really messed up today. And you can hear the archives should be up in a week or so. Also, check us out on our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter, ICTFR. And we're also on iHeartRadio, so the archives will be up on our iHeartRadio. And we'll see you next week.
Take
care.
You have been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.